Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by composer Dana Kaufman.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
How are you doing today?
I'm well as long as I'm with you, Daniel and Maureen. Oh. How are you both?
How charming. Oh my god.
We're really good.
We just got back in town from the holidays late last night. We got in at like 1 a.m. and it's like, you know, anyone that's in Chicago right now knows that it's basically just like we're kind of in the middle of I don't know,
the really freezing cold.
Yeah. And our apartment, you could tell just by feeling it, we'd brought like the cats with us to our trip and everything, so when we got home it was just an apartment that no one had been inside of for like 9 days.
You know, that like very igloo.
Yeah, it's like a very specific kind of cold in a building like that. Like when something is just like, this place just has not been touched and it is like the coldest it's been all year. Like, so when we got home at like 1 a.m. and we have like, our setup really is like, we have radiators in the ceiling, which first off, anyone listening and that is a regular listener and has heard our radiators, we're aware they're very loud and there's nothing that I can do about it. Like, I've agonized over it many more hours than you probably have. But anyway, I'm sorry. What I was saying is that the radiators, not only are they loud, but because they're in the ceiling and like heat rises, they don't actually really work. So we have space heaters. And so last night we like put them all on. And even then it was just like a weird cold sleep thing. So we actually got another space heater, like a real like Mac Daddy, like,
which then caused our power to go out twice. Yes.
So that's basically been our day. But
I live in Miami and it's legitimately cold there now. Yeah. Not like it is in Chicago, but a few weeks ago it was in the 50s and I saw someone wearing a really heavy winter coat and I thought, you know no pain.
Yeah.
You know no suffering.
Really?
Yeah. I grew up in the tundra.
Well, I lived in Florida. I lived in Orlando for a while and it's always really funny to me because I still have a bunch of friends that live there. And so it's like on Facebook and stuff, I mean. And so it's interesting when it drops to like the 40s or something and it's like, oh my god, it's so cold. And it's like, dude,
you don't understand.
You don't get it.
You
haven't
get
lived
it
until school is canceled because it's too cold to go outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like your nose will freeze and fall off. Yeah. I love, we have just candles all over the place. Random. I'm getting sick, so I'm not like, I'm getting a little loopy. But we should
Perfect.
Talk about you because you're here.
You're talking to the microphone.
Yeah. I've got these on that you should be able to hear me through those too.
Okay.
So tell us, well, because you have so many like kind of projects cooking right now. Mm-hmm. Would you mind telling us a bit? I'm trying to, which one do you want to talk about first?
I'd love to talk about the Kardashians, actually.
Yeah, go yeah, for it.
If
then.
That's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So, for my doctoral dissertation in music composition at University of Miami Frost School of Music, I am writing a one-act opera, Opera Kardashian, that is about tragedy and the human condition as told through the Kardashians.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be workshopped by University of Miami Frost Opera Theater.
Cool.
And Alan Johnson and Ensemble Ibis, which is the contemporary music ensemble at the Frost School of Music, directed by Sean Crouch. And that will happen from April 23rd through 27th.
Wow.
Of
cool.
2018. Yeah, so that's coming up. The inspiration for the opera, or some of the inspiration, came from Cycle Kardashian, which is a shorter song cycle about the Kardashians. And that came out of a commission from Opera Rocks Productions in New York and premiered in June at New York Opera Fest. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm working with an absolutely phenomenal librettist named Tom Swift, and he's based in the Dublin, Ireland area.
Cool.
So Ooh. We've been communicating long distance, but I just feel so fortunate to have him on board.
Cool. Op Rocks, they're pretty legit. Like, that's what I've noticed by, because I was on Tumblr 6 years ago, and they've been kicking for a while and do very interesting stuff, and the stuff that they've been producing, it feels like they do really cool picks, you know? Like, it does not surprise me that this is where that happened. But here's a question that's not relevant to that. What about the Kardashians, like, drew you to them?
So, a few years ago, I want to say 2014, I walked into the foyer of my apartment in Boston and saw my roommate watching, thankfully with a sense of humor and irony. Mm-hmm. He was watching an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, yeah. which I had never seen before. And really? I knew yeah. who the Kardashians were, and I knew something about them, but not a whole lot. And I watched for maybe a minute and thought, oh my gosh, these people are opera characters waiting to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, they are so awful and dramatic, and they have everything that a composer could ever want in an yeah. opera character. So this has sort of been in the back of my mind for some time, and then I received this fellowship at the University of Miami, and as part of the agreement of my fellowship, or one of the stipulations, was that I was to write an opera for my dissertation, and I had already written an opera for my undergraduate thesis, and mm-hmm. I focus on vocal and operatic writing. That's really my main passion within composition. So when the time came to decide on a topic, I thought, okay, well, I can do another Russian short story like I did for my undergraduate thesis.
Such a good...
Or I could do the Kardashians, which I just really wanted to do. So I consulted several people and professionals in the opera world, and they said, you know, if you want your dissertation to go beyond an academic realm, go with the Kardashians.
Yeah. Sorry, no, yep. no, I didn't mean to cut you off. Oh, well, I mean, that's so interesting to me, because that is something that I think that, you know, it's kind of a conversation that we sometimes fully have and sometimes kind of talk around, which is the idea of, like, educated spaces, how it can sometimes be hard for topics that are really interesting topics in educated spaces can't have legs outside of them. And I think that that's a really, like, powerful... It's cool to hear... It's great when you hear conversations that happen in educated spaces that consider that.
Thank you.
You know, because we really need that. Did you end up just binging the Kardashians after that, or, like...
My soul has crumbled. I have watched so much of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, yeah. going through the seasons, going through their spinoffs. I follow them on Facebook, but have yeah. prioritized their posts so that they appear first on my newsfeed. So every wow. time yeah. I open Facebook, I'm just inundated with Kardashian yeah. crap. And
do you have a favorite?
A favorite Kardashian? Yeah. Oh, it really depends on the day and what yeah, they're doing. Sure. I mean, they just
for a while,
so
Courtney
ridiculous.
Was my favorite.
She's a little spacey, yeah. I would say. Yeah,
yeah, and I appreciate that in a Kardashian, weirdly. And I think Scott Disick is a giant douchebag. But
who's your favorite today? Like who are you feeling right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
I think... I guess I will think about them in the context of the opera and, yeah. and the people that they have become in the opera. And I guess Kim has been my favorite, and she has been so fun to sculpt and mm-hmm. To make her into this really fantastic, over-the-top, dramatic character mm-hmm. on stage.
Well, she's the prototype Kardashian. Not the prototype, the, like, what's the word I'm looking
for? She made it all happen.
She's the what's it called when it's
trailblazer.
Someone, yes. Yeah. Yes. She was the original. So that's super interesting. So I, like, you know, coming from, we were just on Long Island with my family. My mom loves the Kardashians. Watches everything. She also probably has it on the newsfeed. And it's, you know, I just, that's kind of like, getting to live in that world that you're living in, where you're straddling both of these spaces, where, like, you're getting a dissertation, but also, like, you're doing something that is, like, relevant to a, like, 50-something woman living on, in, like, rural Long Island, and, like, you, like, I just think that that... I'm curious, what do you think that perspective has done for your academic mindset, if that makes sense? Like, what do you think... How do you think that experience is different than other folks getting a dissertation? And maybe that's a weird question to ask.
No, but. Absolutely. I mean, I think there was some initial concern from professors who that said, you know, I'm not sure, I think this will be a stale topic in 10 years, or this is not, you know, this is not as academic as a dissertation
should
be.
They've been going for 10 years, though, is the thing.
Oh, yeah. Her sex tape was released, or leaked, like, you know, about 10 years ago, and it is the... actually, I put this in my dissertation proposal and talked about it in front of my dissertation committee, that it is the, I think, the most popular and most viewed sex tape in the world, that it has the highest sales. So, you know, talk about a trailblazer.
I mean, right.
But I think eventually my professors were on board and are completely supportive. And when I think about the Kardashians, beyond the glitz and the glam and the plastic surgery and all the tabloid nonsense, there's a lot of tragedy and a lot of issues that we face as human beings, even if we don't have our own reality shows.
Right.
You know, death, divorce, gender dysphoria, addiction, all kinds of issues that people face. And I think ultimately this opera has been about the lives primarily of Kim Kardashian and Caitlyn Jenner, and looking into what they have experienced, just as you would in any other opera character. So in shaping any kind of conflict, whether or not they're part of the 21st century or all over social media.
Yeah, that's super interesting.
I actually have a question. In terms of, like, sculpting these characters, I'm interested in where you think, like, opera character inspiration is going to go in like coming years, because I think that, like, in like the origins of opera, it was a lot of like French farces and you know, kind of like the whole like Figaro story. You know, it had a lot of basis in like popular stories, and I'm interested, like, in terms of this whole like cult of celebrity that we're experiencing right now, do you think that... And, like, feel free to, like, absolutely toot your own horn here, but do you think that, like, choosing to write about something that is so intensely pop culture is going to be, like, do you think it's going to become a more popular trend?
I absolutely think it's going to become a more popular trend, and there have been several operas about pop culture that have been successful. The Jerry Springer opera and Anna Nicole.
I was just thinking about the Anna Nicole opera.
And I think now is the time to write opera. Now is the time to feature whatever subject you want, because I think there are really open-minded audiences out there, and there are people hungry for topics that are really relevant to them. So I think that, yes, that was absolutely a consideration in choosing the Kardashians, that I care very much about making opera accessible and reaching people and focusing on content that is relevant to them. And I definitely think that is a trend that could continue.
Yeah, that's something that was what I was kind of thinking about before, was the word that you've used a couple times, and I keep kind of playing it back in my head, too, is relevant and relevancy. And I think that is something that we're afraid of in a weird way in classical music. Like you meant, like you mentioned the pop culture stuff that has been set to opera in the past. But even like Anna Nicole Smith, obviously very popular, but not in the same way that the Kardashians are, if that makes sense. Like, well, because they're very much part of the zeitgeist now.
Yeah, because when the Anna Nicole opera was written, it was
like a decade after, right? Or
it was because she was like at her like her zenith in the early 2000s, and I think that the Anna Nicole opera was like 2011 or something like that.
Yeah,
and I think that it was just kind of like a retrospective. It was like so.
Yeah, that almost misses the pulse of relevancy for me.
Yeah,
we're in a weird way. But so what I'm curious for you, Dana, is in what way? Why do you think it is that we, as an opera going folks, or classical music and you know people, we're both why? Like, what is it about relevancy that is so hard for us to kind of handle? Because I feel like we both crave it, but I also really feel like we have a hard time figuring out what is relevant, you know?
I think we really struggle in the classical world with honoring tradition and allowing ourselves to explore contemporary topics.
Yeah.
And I think you can do both, and I think there is absolutely room for both, that you can have Mozart and contemporary opera at the same time. It's just about creating enough space and giving ourselves the chance to explore mm-hmm. something new, that it's about allowing us to have that mindset and not say, well, we're only going to listen to old symphonies.
Right.
No.
What I find
only Bach.
Bach or go home. What I'm wondering what I've noticed in the difference between opera and musical theater is that in musical theater there's no hesitation in writing a musical about what is happening right now. And I think that has a lot to do with, like, the culture surrounding Broadway of, like, there are, first of all, so many theaters in such a concentrated space that, of course, there's just, like, more room for that level of output, and there is a whole system for workshopping new works, and so I think that in that world, I might be answering my own question here, but I don't care because I'm
that's great
doing it. Yeah. I'd like your thoughts on this anyway. Of why do you think we are so precious about the subject matter we write about in opera? Because you mentioned that your professors or that people that you talked to, some of them were hesitant because, like, oh, who's gonna care about this topic in 10 years? I'm wondering what the hesitation is of approaching subject matter that may be more ephemeral.
I think a lot of it has to do, frankly, with thinking about how we fund our operas, how we fund the arts, who our supporters are, and what kind of things they'd like to see happen on stage. And the Kardashians or Opera Kardashian will never be popular among a certain subset of people. It may never be popular among any subset of people, but I know there's a large body of people out there who will have absolutely no interest in seeing the Kardashians, and that's okay. But the people who are highly supportive of the opera world are making a large portion of it still happen. And I think it's hard not to think about those people when choosing a subject matter.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know. I would hope and think that as the opera audience changes, and to a certain, I think that you're right that the people still currently funding opera are the same people that have always funded opera, and that is the older generation, whatever that generation may be. But I would hope that as opera kind of becomes a little more mainstream, which, do you think opera is becoming more mainstream?
I think it is, actually, in a way, and I think part of that is due to the emergence of so many independent opera companies that are attracting a lot of young audiences looking for a spiced up Carmen or, really interesting twists on old classics. So I think more people are going to the smaller companies than ever have before. But I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
Well, I always think of,
I think it's hard to discern that being in it. It's hard to tell if what you're doing is mainstream when it's what you do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting that a lot of, like, general arts people really seem to, like, be taking that opera leap. Like, I always think of the Constellation series in Upper Bucktown, where they do that new music thing every Sunday. And I've been to it a couple times. And the crowd, I like, maybe I just don't know as many music people as I think I do, but I don't usually recognize a lot of people. And to me, what that says is that there is a certain draw that, and I always think of, like, these arts meme pages that start up that are also kind of like jokes and riffs on the ideas of the eras of arts and of the arts and stuff like that. But I think that that it's not, like, that far of a jump to start thinking about it in the way that we as classically trained musicians do, which is, like, thinking about the eras of classical music and thinking about that in relationship to the art that was going alongside of it. Like, it's not, like, these things are not as far as, for whatever reason, when us opera folks tend to think that it's, like, such a long trip, the distance between, like, what people enjoy regularly and what we've studied. And it's like that mindset might be the thing that's, like, actually holding back, you know, you and the art form.
No, I will say, with regard to accessibility, that maybe the Kardashians are a very relevant subject, but, you know, my grandparents' friends are never going to want to listen to it. And my grandmother says, "Oh, I like all your pieces, even the ones that go." So, you know, so it is going to be inaccessible to a certain group of people musically and aesthetically. So there is, you know, I don't think, attract everybody who is necessarily into the Kardashians. I think you still have to be an opera fan as well.
Yeah. I'm also wondering, I'm interested in that as a concept, in terms of, like, not every piece that is written by a person necessarily has to be for everybody. I'm trying to decide if that idea is, I don't know, that just occurred to me, is, like, It's not like you're going to go to your grave having been the person who wrote Opera Kardashian. Like, there's more that you will have done. Fingers crossed. But I'm wondering what you think about that not everything has to be for everybody.
I don't think everything can be for everybody. Yeah. I think it's impossible to please everybody. I think this opera will definitely ruffle some feathers. I think it would make some people happy. I think there are some people who couldn't care less about it. So, and that's how it would be with, I think, choose any subject, and you're not going to be able to make everybody happy. But I wanted to go for it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think another thing that I really want to kind of ask you about and talk about is something that I know that is super important to you, which is the gender and the way that gender really lines up with the work that you're doing and thinking about gender and thinking about all these things. And I also think it's interesting. Well, yeah, I'm going to go with this. So the thing I'm really curious about first is, what do you think, especially with, as you're working with, like, you know, mostly female characters and, like, you have a trans character, you know, that is something that is a bit of an unexplored area in classical music. And I feel like in a lot of ways we're actually really just starting to understand and talk about and figure out gender politics and, you know, in the wake of, like, Me Too and things like that, really coming and understanding what the, like, threat of masculinity has been to the, not even the threat, what the existence of toxic masculinity has been to the world. But I think that, you know, seeing that in some ways, you know, it can feel like that wasn't going to be a thing that was going to touch classical music. But, you know, I think that for those with their kind of, like, finger on the pulse can tell, especially with projects that come up, like, and I feel like this is very much that, in that vein of thinking, of trying to find material that really talks about gender. And so I'm curious for you, you know, and my long preface is because I'm curious for you, like, in that wave of thinking in classical music that is very, we're figuring out, like, what has your work on Cycle Kardashian and Opera Kardashian kind of, in what way has that existed?
Well, for those who are not familiar with Caitlyn Jenner, she was formerly known as Bruce Jenner, the world's greatest athlete, the Olympic athlete, and macho
cover of the Wheaties box, yeah.
I'm sorry?
Cover of the Wheaties box,
who in 2015 came out as a trans woman and has transitioned and now goes by the name Caitlyn. So when I first had the idea for this opera, Caitlyn had not yet come out as a trans woman, so I had imagined the character of who people refer to as Bruce as part of the opera, as this macho Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
So when, as I was thinking more and more about the topic and Caitlyn transitioned, I thought, oh my gosh, our Opera Kardashian would have to include Caitlyn,
right,
and not what we thought of as Bruce. So I thought, you can't really have an opera about the Kardashians without including Caitlyn Jenner. She has been a huge part of the Kardashian story and clan. And I thought, this is a trans character on stage, and it was actually the idea of Alan Johnson, who is director of Frost Opera Theater, that this really needs to be a role performed exclusively by trans women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think opera is ingrained in such a long history of Orientalism, blackface, yellowface,
right,
sexism, you name it, and I don't want to be a part of that
at
all. And it is time that a trans woman be able to play the role of a trans woman. So I'm writing the part for exclusively for performance by trans women, and it's actually would be the first known opera to create a trans role exclusively for trans people. So the librettist with whom I'm collaborating, Tom Swift, and I both identify as cisgender, meaning that we identify with our assigned gender at birth. So I'm a cisgender woman and he's a cisgender man. So no matter how much research we do, how many people we interview, how much we read, how much we watch on TV, we will never, ever have a full understanding of trans triumphs, struggles, tragedies, and we are not qualified to create this role because we don't have an understanding of that experience. So I've been doing my absolute best to do research. I've spoken with several trans women, opera singers, vocal pedagogues who work with trans singers, choir director who works with trans singers, and just doing as much research as I can so that I can create the role in the most politically sensitive and frankly biographical light. So it's definitely been a challenge, and we can't at all claim to know what it's like to be trans, but we wanted to create this character, and I think as an ally it's important to speak up.
For sure. I think it's really interesting because I think a lot, and a lot of times, obviously there's like egregious things in classical music and opera where, you know, it's like blackface, like what the fuck. But like, like maybe we don't want to like have the entire cast of Madame Butterfly be white people. But I think the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, there's also a wave of kind of like, I'm trying to think of the way I want to put this. Generic liberalism that there's like a pandering aspect of it, or the idea of like half measures. You know what I mean by that? Where it's like, oh yeah, we considered it, and then use the
and then it was tried, but
right, yeah. Or I always think of there was a lot of feathers ruffled when I saw a South African man, but a white South African man playing Othello. And I don't mean to specifically call that out, but like my point here being is that like there are ways to kind of do this thing where you make a move, you do something where it's like we kind of did the thing, but like you really didn't. And I'm curious for you, because it sounds like, and obviously when you make that decision of being like this can only be done by a trans woman, that is very much saying no half measures. This needs to be, you need to do the thing. And I'm curious for you, did you, like, what is the driving force behind you not doing the half measure? In what way would you, because I think the question I can't ask you, or like wouldn't want to ask you, is like, what is it about the trans experience that we can't do that? But I think that there's something to be said about, like, as a room full of cis allies, like there's a mindset that I'm trying to figure out how to put this into words, but there's like a thing that, like, when you are sitting with that decision, like what was the bane of that that half measure thing for you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my dissertation proposal, I hadn't decided at the time that this role should really be performed exclusively by trans women. And again, the idea was really suggested and then emphasized by Ellen Johnson. But I made a flow chart, like a huge flow chart of all the different possible combinations of people who could play Caitlin. There was a man in drag. There was a woman of each fach, a man of each fach. There was a choir. There was a duet, you know, two people singing behind one another. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is really an opportunity to do it right, or to do it as right as I can, and to make a statement and to open a door for people who face systemic oppression both on and off stage. And so I've spoken with a couple people who have expressed interest in performing the role in an eventual production, if and when that should happen. Mm-hmm. So I know that people are interested, and I know that this is a role that they are happy to see is happening. But you know, I mean, now that I've made the decision, I've been in contact with a small opera company, for example, and wrote to them and said, regarding a call for scores, hey, you know, I didn't phrase it this way, but hey, you have to be willing to hire a trans woman outside the company to produce this. And they said, awesome, submit. So, cool. You know, so that is something that I would need to state every time I submit it to a company or seek out a production. For the workshop, as Frost Opera Theater does not have any openly trans students, the role of Caitlin will be performed or workshop by a cis student. But you know, in terms of a stage production.
For sure.
It's definitely just for trans women.
Yeah.
So who is the, who is, how does the performer singing the role of Caitlin, how do they identify?
So the performer would identify as a trans woman or trans feminine, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Has the role been cast at the school yet?
It has not yet, and that's is a workshop, so it's not staged, and it's right. not it's it's open to the public, but not a performance of it.
Gotcha. And who are you, like, in terms of this workshop, what is the fach of the singer that you are looking for to sing the role?
It's an excellent question. So based on the people, based on interviews with several people I spoke with, I was trying to figure out what range the greatest number of trans women share, opera singers share.
Right.
And every voice is different, but if you don't... So most trans women singers transition after puberty. So if you take estrogen after puberty, then your vocal cords likely will not change. And unless you have some kind of vocal feminization therapy, your voice will remain in its original range.
Right.
So there are some people who have had voice therapy. There are some people who have not had voice therapy. There is one trans feminine person I spoke with who identifies as a soprano. So the range that seemed best to write for Caitlin's role is G3 to C5. So the G below middle C to the C above middle C.
Okay.
And it's a fairly limited range, but I think it's far more important to cast a trans woman than it is to have another fourth available. And then the arias are transposable. So, for example, should a trans woman identifying as a soprano be interested, then the arias could be
That's so smart. And I'm sorry.
No problem.
Off. Yeah. Because I think that is... The thing is that I kind of what I was thinking about before is I think a lot of companies would balk and say, like, it's hard to find a person that can do it. But I think that, A, you can. And B, when the composer is, like, providing, like, here is, like, multiple ways to do this. Like, here is instilled flexibility. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in terms of the story arc, what story does Opera Kardashian tell?
It tells the stories primarily of Kim and Caitlyn beginning in the 90s and going through basically the Vanity Fair photo shoot in 2015 where Caitlyn came out as a trans woman in a beautiful white bodice. So it opens with Kim in Paris Hilton's closet as she was Paris Hilton's stylist, and that's how she got her start. And in a sort of split screen, Caitlin, as then Bruce, is in a Hilton, in a Hilton hotel room about to give a motivational speech, because Caitlin used to go around giving motivational speeches as this
right.
former Olympic athlete. So she's in the hotel room dressed as a woman and basically having a conversation with herself about gender dysphoria before she goes out and gives a motivational speech. So we're juxtaposing these two ideas of womanhood, one that Kim is literally in a closet, but much more liberated, and Caitlin is metaphorically in a closet and feels very trapped. And then those ideas really switch as Caitlin becomes more liberated through transitioning and Kim becomes more trapped after she is robbed at gunpoint in Paris and has these flashbacks and feels feels very trapped as a celebrity. In the end, however, and one of the things that the trans women I spoke with emphasized the most was that it was just as important, if not more important, to make sure that Caitlin is not portrayed as a hero, as mm-hmm. it was to cast a trans woman in that role. Mm-hmm. So in the last scene, Caitlin's at the Vanity Fair shoot and it's liberating, but she also says things like, now I get to use the ladies' room at Trump Tower, and mm-hmm. she really shows her Republican side and right. how she has failed to be an advocate.
Mm-hmm. I was curious about that, because as much as Caitlin's very public transition did do a lot to put the trans experience in the public eye, she's kind of a terrible person.
She is a terrible person. And I think, I certainly don't mean at all to speak for the trans community, but certainly what I have sensed when I've spoken with trans people is that she has made everything worse for them, that they rather she would not have been so outspoken. And I don't think you can try to be the face of the transgender community and also be a face of the Trump campaign at the same time. They're mm-hmm. mutually exclusive activities. So, you know, people impressed upon me how important it was to not depict her as a right. hero, and to make sure that, you know, the end of the story is tragic in the sense that it shows that she is not the advocate that she could have been or should be. Mm-hmm. And to really do her character justice, we can't let her off the hook.
That actually really resonates with kind of my next question, which is, I think it's interesting, I mean, with the Kardashians specifically, because we were talking about the plot too, like, things change so suddenly, you know? And I'm curious for you, when coming at it, when thinking about plot, because, I mean, I remember when it wasn't, like, outwardly apparent how terrible Caitlyn Jenner was when she first came out as trans, I think. And maybe it was also partly because that happened before Trump was in office, I think. Mm-hmm.
It happened in 2015.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm kind of curious for you, and we've kind of talked about a little bit about this when you were talking about how originally you thought that it was going to be Bruce and not Caitlyn. Mm-hmm. But just kind of like thinking about that, how have you thought about the plot? Like, is it still open to change at a certain point, or have you had to be like, nope, this is it? You know?
Yeah, we cut it off at the Vanity Fair shoot.
Yeah.
So it's really from the time that Caitlin is sitting in that Hilton hotel room and
right.
Kim is in Paris Hilton's closet to up to Vanity Fair to show what kind of harm she has done for the trans community. And the opera is such a mix of comic and tragic that mm-hmm. that first scene there's a lot of ridiculousness with Kim talking about shoes, but then there's also gender dysphoria, and then the second scene is actually keeping up with the Kardashians mishmash episode.
Mm.
So we have Kim losing her $75,000 earrings in Bora Bora.
Mm-hmm.
We have all kinds of.
I really badly want to watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians now. Is the thing? Sorry,
that's on YouTube. You can find that easily.
Oh yeah I'm
that
sure.
moment. You know, Kim and Khloe call each other slut whore and psycho bitch, and there's a mention of the Girls Gone Wild risque photo shoot in Mexico, and so and then we have Kim's robbery, and some of that is really ridiculous because the robbers are singing in old classical French about how her chunky gold necklaces accentuate her lacy white dress, and so but then she's also being robbed at gunpoint. So there's a big mix of I think comedy, tragedy, but also ridiculousness and what's very raw. What was the question again?
No, what was the question?
about the plot?
Yeah, just kind of like the flexibility of the plot and pulling from, which I think you totally nailed, the pulling from the different, I mean, just because of the fact that it's so expansive, the Kardashian universe, if that's even the way to put it, like it covers so much, like.
We definitely tried to do highlights, so snippets from their life, and it is very biographical, and you know, with the exception of the robber speaking classical French,
right,
and these small fantastical elements we've put in, but it goes in chronological order. There is another Keeping Up with the Kardashians episode that is shorter and darker, and you know, those are both real. Both those episodes are real in a way because they are a part of their family history, and the reality TV show is who they are. So, you know, we wanted a compelling trajectory, and it took us many stabs at the plot. I mean, we thought about superimposing Faust and, you know, all kinds of...
That's interesting, yeah. And, well, that's... So my curiosity is, do you feel like this is going to resonate more with a Kardashian fan or with an opera fan? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, interesting. Somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
Somebody who's got a little bit of both of them. But I think if there's one thing I can do successfully, and I don't necessarily do it successfully all the time, but I feel like I can sometimes just reach people with dramatic writing, and you know, I think my first opera was accessible even to people who aren't into weird classical music, and I'm trying to make it as quirky but accessible as possible.
Cool. Well, we only have a few minutes left, so the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1 minute plug for anything they have upcoming. We also love hearing shout outs for other folks that you think are doing dope work. So if you want to talk about any self-care stuff, like maybe watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians. No. But TV shows, movies, music, books you're reading, things like that.
In terms of shout outs and just other projects I've been working on, I was composer in residence of this phenomenal choir based in Hawaii called the Navai Chamber Choir. And I had the opportunity to compose music for the choir and then sing with the choir in Hawaii. And I owe that fantastic experience to Jay Saplan and the Navai Chamber Choir, my chamber choir sisters. And that the Navai Chamber Choir really celebrates and champions music by Native Hawaiians and women, and so it was really an honor to be their first composer in residence. I have some nice upcoming performances around the country and in Belgium this summer, and for now I'm mainly focusing on writing this dissertation. But other shout outs too, again, Frost Opera Theater at University of Miami and Ensemble Ibis, and my family and friends, you know who you are, the Walker family, and that's pretty much it.
Cool.
I'd love to talk about Tom, the librettist, who I'm working with, if that's...
Yeah.
So, I just want to give the biggest shout out to Tom Swift, as I mentioned, librettist, and he is a playwright, writer, and librettist, professional based in the Dublin, Ireland area, and I just loved his aesthetic so much and have so enjoyed working with him. We've only been corresponding long distance, but I hope he is able to come to the States for a workshop or eventual production, and you know, hopefully we'll get to meet in person.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
You should also go to Ireland, because Ireland is the best.
I think it's amazing. Yeah.
I was going to say, though, you've got a pretty good, vacation spot list of places you've worked, as far as like Hawaii and Miami,
Estonia,
and, like, Chicago. No. Cool, awesome. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways that you can do that. First off, you can head to scopymag.com. That's going to be your best bet. We post all of our articles there, all of our podcast episodes, all of our videos. It's a great, great place. It's only getting better every day. So check it out. Do that.
I have one more shout out.
Oh, sure. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. One more shout out to my Frost Composition Department family. You're the best, and you are making all this happen.
Awesome.
Cool. cool. So yes, that. Also, keep up with us on social media, Facebook, we're Scopy Magazine, on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Play, Radio Public, and iTunes Podcasts. We are Scopy Mag. And we spell that SCAPIMAG.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we could use a little bit more help. If you're in a position to give, you can head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our donate section. There are a couple ways that you can give. First of all, you can do a one-time donation. If you choose to do that, you will have our eternal gratitude. If you choose to give on a monthly level, then for as little as $5 a month, you can support our mission of uplifting local arts and independent media. If you're interested in giving on a higher level, or interested in any advertising opportunities that we may have, please feel free to reach out to us, scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little. Wait, one more shout out?
I also want to say, for those who are interested in seeing Cycle Kardashian in the Chicago area, Sam Ataguile will be performing at least one movement from it at the Heartland Cafe New Brew Chicago Opera on Tap on February 27th.
Awesome.
Cool.
Perfect. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, everyone.